right. Welcome to the Aaron Werner podcast on iCode Media. And we're welcoming back Brianna Rue, although Brianna, it feels just like a constant conversation that you and I keep having. And I love it. I absolutely love it. You changed my life and I think the lives of a lot of folks who listen when we first had you on and talked about time saving and the book Buy Back Your Time, which has sparked a whole revolution in my life and lots of our colleagues. And, you know, last time we had you on was with, we were talking about virtual assistants. We actually had mine on, and Mariana, and she was fantastic. In fact, setting up this podcast was hilarious because Mariana was talking to your virtual assistant and you and I just kind of sat in the back and we were watching everything happen and watching our lives, you know, be organized and us told what we're going to, where we're going to go, what we're going to do. Which is quite liberating to not have to stress about it. So, and then we were talking on the phone the other day about just why sometimes people like me and probably some of our listeners are stubborn on making those change, right? We're afraid of what's behind the curtain. And sometimes that fear of seeing what's behind the curtain or behind the door keeps us from taking those steps to open the door, go behind the curtain, to get something really good on the other side. And I said, well, this is a pretty interesting conversation. And so let's bring you on and record it. that's the direction I hope we're going to go today. And you said something that was really quite interesting to me and has stuck with me. It made me feel silly. You said that too often when we hear hoofprints behind us, we turn around expecting to see a horse. Right. And sometimes it's a zebra. Mm-hmm. And so expound on that a little bit.
Yeah. So what kind of sparked this conversation, Aaron, and it's interesting to look back when we first connected, like at kind of the end of 2023, here we are already through the first quarter. And I had maybe just gotten my, my assistant fully uploaded on board, with me. And then just seeing a lot of people, you know, read that book and I get like kind of like death mail sometimes, or like even from you, you were like, I love you, but I hate you on what this has done to my life. And so I think it was just, again, such a practical book. So if you've not read it, like it's one of those books that really is easy to follow. There's not a lot of language to learn. And just that step approach that we kind of all really need on where to start. I think that's where we're going. But we were talking about, I get in my own way too. So this is, you know, defining what success is to you. It looks different for everybody. And I think starting with that and being genuine to yourself to follow that path. But one thing where we were talking on like the Dr. Contact Lens side or evolution in our practices. So not necessarily change, right? The word change evokes a negative emotion. And I was taught this very recently. Starting to change the word change to evolve. And then you and I were chatting about, you know, in school, when we're taught the medical side of it, if you have a patient that comes in with something, like think of the easy thing. So like that's where the if you hear like the pitter-patter behind you, most likely it's a horse, right? So think that it's a horse. And then look to the zebras, right? Yeah. Where a lot of the times as business owners, we get hung up on the zebras versus the horses. So that's kind of this thing behind horses versus zebras. So on the sales side of this, that's where all that was coming from. So we can jump into that.
Yep. No, and actually we had an example in the office yesterday. My staff called me and two young men came in and ultimately we suspected them of stealing some Gucci sunglasses. And I mean, it happens. You're in business, you're in retail, you're going to lose things. And it flat out sucks when it does. It's a violation of trust. It's a violation of, I feel violated. What was interesting is watching their reactions because they immediately wanted to go into lockdown mode. Right. And we wanted to have, you know, armed escorts, but escorts for everybody coming into the office, you know, an armed guard on the outside. Like you wanted to just lock down. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, when's the last time we know we got something stolen? And our office is on FrameDream through VisionSource. I don't know if you're aware of it, but all our frames stay on the wall. Nothing comes off the wall. So it's really easy to see when something's missing because there's a gap there, right? So when's the last time we knew that something got stolen? I said, well, we can't remember. I said, well, we sell hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of frames, and one pair got stolen, right? Could there be an after-action report and something we could have done? Probably. But you're never going to eliminate all of it. And so let's not change our policies and to try to prevent one negative act. Let's still try to build on all the positive acts because I'm fine with one frame being stolen if selling 500. I'll take that trade-off all day long. And, does it suck? Absolutely. But, shoot, I probably give away more in revenue just by handing out free samples instead of telling somebody to,
So true.
Because I'm an
Oh my God.
optometrist. That's what I do.
That's what I do.
Right? And I feel
But
bad
that's
for
a
the
great, I
person,
love
right?
that that's the scenario, right? Because I think that when you said it too, it's like that violation of trust. So yeah, along that way, but you got to get over that in order to really see the other side. So constantly when we're evaluating new products and new services and things like that, well, this one time in 1997, this happened, so I'm not going to say yes. Or like, I can't believe how much that gets in our way of success and really adopting new things. So that's where the purple zebra kind of came up, where that's what we're getting hung up on. And it's that whole the, Pennywise pound foolish scenario too, that we're not fully trusting.
It's that negative N of one. That one time I tried, it's that negative N of one. And why is it that we're, is it a, I'm curious now, is it limited to optometry and private practice owners, right? Or is it just a human thing where we, is it a protective mechanism where we're afraid of change, we're afraid of anything that could possibly go wrong, and so we look for the negative first to protect ourselves? Are we more subject to it, or do we just are more aware of it with our colleagues and ourselves because that's the world we live in?
Yeah, I think if we kind of just look, we are in general negatively wired. So, because of that protective mechanism, but now we can let that go, right? We know that we're safe. We know we have food. We know we have water. We have the basic necessities. Back then, you didn't even have that, right? So, what, 300,000 years ago, we've been in this human form. So, I think getting rid of that primal sense. You do have to overcome it. It's really hard to stay on the positive path. And you're not always going to live on the positive path, right? The negative, you need the negative, but you can't live in that.
No, can't live
So
in that mindset.
if you also reflect on what upsets you, we talk about reviews a lot, right? One like little hack that you can do is negative reviews, right? You'll fester on that negative review. But you won't look at the 45 other positive reviews. So I think celebrating those little wins along the way are really important for yourself and for your team. So one thing was taught to me a while ago was pull up the negative reviews for the competition around you and read those as the negative reviews. So you know what to overcome, where it's not so personal. So I think if you can take the personal thing out of it, because at the end of the day, we're emotional beings. That's what makes us different. But you can't fester there. So how can you turn it around where like, ooh, that sucks, but it fortunately wasn't us, so let's not make that same mistake.
Yep, I like that. I haven't heard that to read the reviews of others, and yeah, it's and we are emotionally connected. I mean, it's our baby. This office that we built, this family we built, is our baby. I'm glad you brought up the reviews. One of the exercises that I've found disheartening but interesting that I've done with a couple of colleagues is a hypothetical scenario where on Wednesday you see a child, you diagnose a potential brain tumor, send them off to neurology, and long story short, they do surgery. You save the child's life. On Thursday, there's a negative interaction in the optical. Patient's upset about something with their glasses. on Friday, you wake up and you see a one-star Yelp review. Friday night, you're having a cocktail. Are you having a cocktail to celebrate saving the child's life, or are you having a cocktail because you're miserable over that one-star Yelp review? We don't have to answer it. I think we know, you know, unfortunately, we're too many of us side on, but trying to shift our mentality to focus on the positive and realize that, you know, the negative is happens everywhere. I've even clicked on our negative reviews and gone to the, clicked on that person that wrote the review and seen that almost all of the reviews are negative. The person's a miserable person.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I feel bad that they have to live life like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it still doesn't make it any easier, but I think putting it into perspective.
Yeah. And I think what this has allowed me to do too, because I look outside of our industry for inspiration a lot of the time. So like being part of BNI for a long time, so Business Networking International, I spent 8 years, you know, every Wednesday waking up at 7 a.m. and giving like a little, you know, minute blurb on my practice. But what that allowed me to do is just expand and see that really we're all doing the same thing. It's what, 3% of our business that's actually different. Yeah. So finding the people that you connect with, like the Aaron Werners of the world, where you can, you know, call them at the drop of the hat, and just really kind of shoot the shit with each other on, you know, what's going good, what's going bad, what's keeping you up at night, is really powerful. And I don't think we do that enough on showcasing with the, you know, the everything is wonderful online of us, in getting back to the real questions.
Yeah, no, great, great example. And those groups are important. I haven't done one formally, but I've got, one of my good friends is a contractor. Another one is I have two good contractor friends. One guy owns a sign company and then built software to help other sign companies. So he's running two different businesses, incredibly successful. But at the end of the day, all of our problems are the exact same, right? They are the exact same problems. And it doesn't matter how much. I mean, some of these guys businesses are doing, you know, multi-millions, and some of them are just kind of small one or two people operations, but it's all the same problems. And it's amazing how, I don't know what this says about my friends and I, but it's amazing how much better we feel just when you can vent to somebody else, right? Get it off and they go, yep, I'm having the same issue too. I think misery loves company. And I feel better knowing that I'm not the only one facing, you know, this nonsense or this craziness, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, for sure. And I think realizing too, in optometric practices, so I was at a Weave event last week and we were just talking, they brought together, there were like in the same room, it was really cool. They brought together dentists, veterinarians, med spa people. There were a couple of optometrists there, some MDs even. So, and then I was fortunate enough to be invited to the talk just on like a blanket kind of practice management thing. And it doesn't matter who you are. It's just that mindset to continue to evolve. And I brought up essentially like gatekeeping, because I was like, how many gatekeepers do you have? And one person was like, 9. And it was like this brag thing, right? And I was like, yeah, I get it. I get the gatekeeping. But what is that holding back from you, right? So when we talk about like horses and zebras, a lot of their zebras come into it too, on past experiences, how they were raised, how they were, look at how they view money, how they view themselves. So I think the zebras come up a lot surrounding us.
How do you address the zebras in your practice? So you're going to bring in a new equipment, you're going to implement a new system, a treat, whatever it is, right? And usually if yours is anything like mine, there's, I think they fake excitement a little bit to humor me, right? There's that, you know, oh, here he goes with something new again, right? Mm-hmm. And they're quick to point out how it's either going to negatively affect the workflow, slow things down, how it might not work, right? How do you address all those zebras when you try to bring something new to your team?
So I think understanding the process of evolution. So even if you Google it right now, it's like process of change. So again, I'm changing the word change to evolve, because we're not even the same that we were even 20 minutes ago. there's a cliff, right? So there's this, you get jumped in. So they say that we're going to do something new. So like, look back to when you got your iPhone, you had to learn something new. You were scared. So then you go into this rut and it's either you can climb back out this way or you can go down and you can come back up the other side. If you can get them, the faster you get from turning backwards and looking backwards to looking forward, that's where the evolution happens and happens faster. So I think really doing more research as scientists, right, on what that evolution looks like, how you, what words you're using, how you're talking about it. I was on a call with a practice the other day, and they were really good at rounding up their zebras in their meetings. So it's not allowing those negative thoughts to come in, acknowledge it really quickly, and then move on. So that, I think, is a gift that you have to curate with your team. Because mine too, like that's just part of our credo with West Broward Eye Care and at Dr. Contact Lens. We have to keep evolving. And if you're not, you are going backwards, and that's the wrong way to go. So I love like animal scenarios, like a kangaroo, right? Happens to be in my name, Roo. They can't go backwards. So maybe that's my gift. They cannot go backwards.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So like be a kangaroo, like you got to go forward. And yeah, some of that's bumpy. Some of it's some things we have to overcome, but we're all capable of doing that.
No, absolutely. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's part of your mission too. It's one of our core values. And I haven't evolved to using big words yet. So our core value, I tried to make it pretty and now it's just, it's change, right? We're going to change.
We're going to change. We're going to evolve.
Change is coming. Although I purposely left it in there because I think it invokes a very strong emotional reaction.
It does.
I wanted that emotional reaction because we're just going to hit the nail on the head. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when our three core values are individual responsibility, right? It's your job. I don't like, let me ask my manager. Right? If you think something needs to be done, do it. I don't have a dollar amount for them to fix a problem with. They just fix the problem. Mm-hmm. They're not going to bankrupt me. And quite frankly, they solve the problem and make us more money than I would have if I solved it the way I, you know, as a doctor, or optometrist rather. So individual responsibility, quality care, which usually means saying no more than you say yes. Right? If you don't want to have, you know, dilation, you know, or optos in the office, we won't see you. I can't do my job without looking under the hood, and you're welcome to go somewhere else. I'm not going to argue and debate that. So it's saying no more than you say yes. And then the last one's change. If we're not constantly looking to progress or evolve, but that means change, then we're going to die.
And, yeah.
It's been interesting how many times bringing that up in interviews, I've had people say, no, I can't. I don't like change. I can't handle not just it being the same every time I show up to work. So I don't want to work here. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll try the process of evolution. That might sound a little bit nicer. I think my team will like that more.
Yeah, for sure.
When you made an interesting comment, when you said, you know, looking forward gets you where you need to go quicker. We can't prevent from looking back, but how do you manage their looking back and then give them time enough to look back and then quickly redirect their attention forward?
Yeah, I think it's just constantly celebrating the successes along the ways. So yeah, and we're all going to have those mistakes. That's what makes us also human. Mistakes are allowed to happen. That's honestly where true growth takes place. So, but just not festering on it. And there, it was a funny thing in our practice when I bought into the practice, one of the doctors brought in a piece of equipment that will remain unnamed. But it became a big paperweight. And for me buying into the practice, I said, I'm not purchasing your paperweight. Like we actually took it off of the deal. So I think just having more fun with it, because again, when you're talking about the emotions that it sparks, some people take that to heart and you can see it on their faces, and some people can, you know, rinse and repeat. So just using it as little stepping stones to continue to get better. And poking some fun at it. You gotta laugh or you might cry. Like that one was an expensive mistake. And I've had my fair share of them too. So just knowing you're going to have them, apologize for it later and move on.
Yep. I like that. So I like giving them time to tell me everything that's going to go wrong. Right. So it's all right. Here's what we're going to try. Tell me everything that's not going to work. Let's get it on the table. You want to tell me anyway, right? And there might be something valuable in there that I didn't think about. Mm-hmm. And so I want to hear the negative, and then we're going to go into the, well, what happens if it works right?
Oh, I like that.
It works out. And so it, it gives them a chance to speak first, I think. And it gives me a chance to then highlight the potential opportunities. And it feels a little bit more natural than just having a very formal SWOT session where I'm going to draw something on the board and we're going to fill in cubes, right? Let's just have an open dialogue that doesn't feel corporate and businessy. It just feels real.
Yeah. And they appreciate that, right?
Oh, yeah.
So then they, you know, everybody at the end of the day wants to feel heard.
Yep. And if whatever they said ends up turning out right, I make sure I give them the opportunity to have a I told you so session.
Right? My optician, if there's like a redo, he sings a song, Another One Bites the Dust. And I'm like... It's so funny. But again, it's like having fun with those moments. Yeah. So, and it's like it, when it reciprocates on him, he gets so mad. It's so funny. And I'm like, again, if you're going to dish it, you got to be able to, you got to be able to take it.
Absolutely. No. And then taking those and building them as part of your culture. It's, I don't know if I've shared this story with you. I don't know if I've shared it on the podcast years ago. We were running late, and I hardly ever run late when I'm running in clinic, but we were running late. And so it was a Friday afternoon. And I walked the patient up to my optician and I said, hey, I'm going to take care of this. And I pointed to the optos. So my intention was I'm going to, you know, waive the optos fee in the practice. And which the way we do it, by the way, is we give them a gift card, so we don't ever zero anything out or take it off. It's always there, so when you go back and look at the line item, you know there was a charge for it, and then the gift. So it's psychologically, I can pull them back next year and say, "No, we charged you." Right?
Wow, I love that's a huge takeaway. If anybody didn't hear that one, love that.
Yeah, I never discount services, and so if I need to discount the service, then I'll give them a gift card, right? And they can just offset it with a gift card as opposed to zeroing it out. And I think psychologically, when they see the invoice that it was there, it shows value to that as opposed to a zero next to that number.
Wow.
So, but
So what happened? You said, well, I'll take care of this.
I'm going to take care of this. And I pointed to, on our flow sheet, I pointed to the optos screening. Well, she was last patient of the day. I'm back in the lab, just talking with the rest of the team. And my optician came back and said, wow, you were really generous today. And I said, I'm really generous today. Like it was $39. I guess I probably didn't have to. And she goes, oh no. And her face went white. And I said, what did you hear me say? And she said, I heard you say you're taking care of everything. I said, totally cool. It's not what I intended to say, but it's what you heard. And she goes, well, you said I'm taking care of this. And I said, I was intending to point, you know, so we walked through it and she goes, oh my gosh, I screwed up so bad. And I said, well, here's what we're going to do. You're going to call the patient and you're going to let the patient know that you and I had a miscommunication. And I fully intended to cover the optos, not the entire visiting glasses. I said, but you're not allowed to let her pay money. And knowing her, she's going to try to give you the credit card. And you're going to say, nope, we're going to honor what we did. But just remind her that that's not going to happen next year, right? It was an internal conversation. I said, but you're going to be the one to call because you feel free to throw me under the bus, right? And so she called and the patient was, you know, adamantly wanted to pay, wouldn't let her. She called, patient called me and I wouldn't let her pay just because there was a point to be made. And for probably 8 years, we used the term Free Frame Fridays as a reminder that we need to communicate better. Free Frame Fridays, right? And I could not have bought a better culture from that.
No, you couldn't have.
I could have. I mean, you're out a couple hundred bucks, 500, whatever it was on, you know, whatever. I spend more money on silly Starbucks,
right? Yeah.
And pens for the office and other crap. But, right. But that term until the last person that the employee we had during that time left, like Free Frame Fridays was part of our culture for a long, long, long time. I don't ever have to hope to want to repeat that, but it taught us that communication is a two-way street. And if you have concerns on it and something seems off, just pause and go clarify.
Yeah.
Some mistakes happen, I guess is the moral of the story. But if you can take them and turn them into learning experiences, they end up being great learning experiences and sometimes kind of funny too.
That's amazing. I love it. And then something we were talking about, kind of what led to this was, you know, some of us, we were going to call it wine and zebras, right? But here we're in the middle of the day. So it's, you can get so ingrained in that kind of whining culture. And I think you have to, you got to filter it back on what you're bringing. So you had brought something up too on just like charging, like where can we make, just less friction. So I went back and I was going to send you a picture. I totally forgot, but like I crossed out all our contact lens fees.
Yes. So
we're going to implement this. Which is going to be super fun.
We talked about how we just, in my office, we have one contact lens fee for all of our soft contact lens and our GP fits. So sclerals, cones, myopia management is separate, but we have one fee for all of our contact lens fits. It's a interesting topic to debate. I'm sure I'm going to get some messages, good and bad, when people listen to this. But it made it easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And patients appreciated it, and we ended up making more money because the process was simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something so silly. I think that I was told a long time ago by a guy named Bruce on one of the, just meeting him on LinkedIn. He likes to say, even when you're like thinking outside of the box, he's like, I even hate that term, because a box, or thinking outside a box, you're still in a box. Mm. So he challenges just little terms that we constantly use that we've become accustomed to break those internal mind barriers that we have all the time that we've put up to protect ourselves or protect the office or protect the patients, right? That we have to, that we're doctors at the end of the day, we have to do that.
Yep.
But where can you have some fun of it? And where are you putting your constraints around you by even just saying, hey, let's think outside of the box? There's still a box there. Like now you're outside of it, but you still are picturing a box. So when you start to hear this term, I was like, so what do you say? And he's like, just think.
That's so simple. It's genius.
Right? That's stupid.
No, it's just think. What's crazy is we idealize the Jeff Bezos and the others who are thinking. I stopped myself from saying
thinking outside
the box, but just others who are.
And they didn't think outside of the box. They thought inside of the box, and they're keeping everybody inside the box.
Yeah.
That they literally should be
out of their box. Yeah. So. Oh yeah, we have too many Amazon boxes on my front doorstep every single day. It's bad, but we look at their innovation and we go, wow, why didn't I think of that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why couldn't I have done something like that? And I think it's one where most of us are risk adverse, and so in putting a lot of your money and time and resources into something that may or may not work out is a scary proposition. You know, if you haven't already done it with your own practice, and there's plenty of times that's been scary.
Yeah.
Plenty of times when it's been fantastic as well. And there's just been way more fantastics than scaries. I think we sometimes are afraid to be successful. If that sounds right, we're afraid of our own success and are afraid of our own potential. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easier, it feels better to be with everybody else. Having conversations like this, having friends that you can call and say, hey, this may end up really cool, or hey, I'm buying this building, or, you know, my goodness, like the world's falling apart on me right now. What do I do? Is important. And those relationships are key.
So maybe we actually need more zebras instead of horses.
I think we do. So. In certain places,
in certain places we do,
right? And I don't need more zebras in clinic. I like hearing hoofprints and thinking it's a horse and it turning out to be a horse. But I also think that we do need to, when appropriate, not worry so much about perfection. I get a lot of students from fourth year students and they come through. And I had one that came back and he was a little bit frustrated. I said, what's wrong? And he goes, well, I could only get him to 20/20 minus on refraction. I said, well, is that a problem? And he's like, well, they should be at least 20/20. Like if, ideally 20/20 plus. I said, well, tell me about the patient. It was a 68-year-old man who hadn't had his cataracts removed yet. And I said, I think you're doing just fine. Right. Was he complaining? No, he's happy. Well, then what are you worried about? Right. You're making a problem where there's not a problem. You're letting perfection get in the way of somebody who's happy. In fact, you may even ruin his experience with us because you left him appreciating that he couldn't see something as opposed to what he could see. Mm-hmm. And I think when we're implementing systems, when we're trying to do things, whether it's me or my team who's wanting everything to be just right, if we're letting perfect get in the way of good and successful, that's a problem.
It is. And I think that's playing on our science brain too, right? So we want everything to be studied correctly before we roll it out, right? If we kind of look back to the early days of March, we were all just kind of figuring it out in March 2020 and taking our best shot at it. And science got in the way, right, of that. So there's a science of business that we all need to be students of. We're constantly a student of optometry or dentistry or whatever else is out there, of life in general. So I think you just have to bring that full circle in. There is a science to this. One thing that was a big take home for me that really flipped my brain was I was at the Vision Council meeting and the guy from Sage, he called himself the future. And he's written a couple books.
He called himself the future?
Yeah. So I'll have to find his name. I'll send it to you so we can put it in the notes. But he said, all of you guys here, and there was like 500 industry people. So I was there on the doctor contact lens side of it, but then also still being a practice owner where all these people are trying to disrupt us, essentially. And he said, look, all of you guys have to understand that you, as optometrists, I look at it this, we're optometrists that happen to own a business. He goes, no, you're right now, you got to flip it. You're a business that happens to provide optometry. In my dad's case, he was a furniture builder that sold furniture. No, he had a business that sold furniture. So he said, you need to take that a step further in the digital age in order to be competitive is you are a technology company that happens to provide what you provide, right?
Oh, that's interesting.
So you are a technology company that provides eye care. So that's how fast all of this kind of sped up. And I feel like we made this huge adjustment and then we went backwards where we could keep that momentum going. And it was really good momentum as far as we were doing business, right?
Yeah.
And it got a little scary, right? But we learned and we did it and we adjusted. So sometimes just ripping that Band-Aid off is necessary, but repicture how you look at yourself as a provider.
The Myopia Collective. Cooper Vision and the AOA have partnered in a groundbreaking initiative to change the way optometrists in the U.S. treat children with myopia. The purpose of the Myopia Collective is to rally the profession of optometry and its allies to interrupt the status quo and elevate the new standard of care for children with myopia. Every individual is encouraged to become a member of the collective. By joining, you commit to taking action to help slow the progression of myopia in children. You'll receive updates and information about the collective and its work in the fight against myopia, gain access to educational opportunities and resources offered by the collective, and hear from change agents, the ambassador optometrists selected to serve as advocates for community and policy change that facilitates the mission of the collective. Scan the QR code or click on the link in the show notes to join the collective today. In the past, our focus revolved around prescribing MacuHealth or MacuHealth Plus to patients at risk of macular degeneration, while also recommending it to collegiate and professional athletes for enhanced contrast sensitivity in sports performance.
However, this year's introduction of the Life Meter has been a game changer. The Life Meter revealed a concerning truth. Many of my patients have alarmingly low skin carotenoid levels, indicating potential deficiencies in essential body tissues like the retina and brain. Supported by over 30 peer-reviewed publications, Life Meter's accuracy, consistency, and effectiveness has been demonstrated across 2,000 subjects with diverse backgrounds. With this newfound insight, I can now have meaningful conversations about carotenoid levels with all of my patients, even those who may seem outwardly healthy. To learn more about this empowering technology, feel free to contact your MacuHealth representative or click on the link in the show notes. Together, let's optimize patient care and elevate their well-being.
That's interesting. So I had never heard of the concept of thinking of ourselves as a technology company that that provides eye care. Very much on board as a business, and some businesses do electrical, some sell shoes. I take care of eyes, right? It's a business. But the next step for the technology side, that's interesting. So break that down a little bit. If we're a technology company, right, and I'm still bringing patients in, having them sit in the chair, running all the tests, shining lights in their eyes and whatnot, how do I view myself as a technology company? Or how does a patient see me or customer see me as a technology company?
So it's bringing it all full circle to how they're like front of the house versus back of the house. It's all kind of one mechanism, right? So online scheduling, having a way for patients to order their contacts, how can they self-serve? How are they checking in with forms? That's the digitization of everything centralized really around your EMR. Then in the back of the house, you have your Optos or your Claris or whatever that you're doing. You're looking at glands. You're using high-level technology to give the patient the best experience. And then you're putting that all together for the patient. So then going back through the checkout on, are we still like dotting PDs? Are we still writing? You know, like these are all things where how can you make this, you know, high tech, high touch? Because there's, you know, Amazon, which is high tech, low touch. If you have a problem with Amazon, you're not calling anybody, right? Yep. So we're still in that high tech, high touch scenario, which is a more valuable experience. So where can you automate some of this functionality? Where can you understand your data, understand who's mining your data behind your back without you utilizing it? We were talking about that. That's really what everybody is after. And you're at the center of it to help that patient, like we said earlier, like diagnose those ones with tumors that nobody else would have caught, right? That's why we do what we do. But you're using tech along all of those pieces. That's how we're a tech company that provides eye care.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. So you brought up Weave earlier. We find that we're scheduling a lot more appointments via Weave over text than we are phone calls. We do a lot more business over text, right? Yeah. Whether it's, are my glasses in yet, or can I make an appointment, or even can I pay, right? Texting them the payment link. Okay. So that makes sense. And I did notice when I checked into a hotel recently, they gave me a paper I had to sign, a hard copy paper, which I thought was odd. And cause I'm used to just signing the little kiosks. Right. And, I don't remember what the paper was. I probably signed away my kids' lives, but,
neither here nor there.
But I just thought it was odd that I had to physically sign a piece of paper checking into a Marriott. I wonder if that's the case in our practices too, right? Are we, you know, you come in and we're high tech, but I'm going to hand you a 3-sheet of paper that you've got to fill out that I then have to turn around and enter in manually into my system. You know,
yeah.
What does that look like on the, for a patient?
So that's kind of, I think, a way that we can continue to, you know, find solutions out there, push our EMR systems to be better, and then just really at the end of the day, ask better questions of these companies is really where this comes down to.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And of ourselves. So here's an interesting question somebody asked me, and I learned a lot from it, so I'll ask you. If a patient walks in, customer walks in, not a current patient, right? Somebody off the street and says, hey, I like those Maui Jims. I just want to buy these Maui Jims. How easy is it in your office for them to just buy a pair of Maui Jims?
So you had posed this question. This was actually the first question I asked my staff on Tuesday, because my Maui Jim display is right there.
Right there.
I was like, if a and I posed this scenario. I was like, what do we do? Like, well, we sell it to them. And I was like, okay, so if we sell it to them, are they still being entered in our practice management software to run the sale? And they're like, of course they are. And we still ask, because maybe they want like a prescription sunglass. They had like this drawn out thing. At the end of the day, we did sell it to them. And we probably got in our way of like the zebras here, where it's a bad zebra, saying, you know, well, if there's a warranty problem, we have to know when we sold it. And I was like, okay, I got you there. But like, let's just make sure that this is efficient and effective if somebody walks off the street. So it was one of those learning moments for my team and for me. Cause yeah, I think we've squashed some of those sales for sure.
Well, we get in our own way. And I think that's when we, you know, the purple zebra walked in, because mm-hmm. that's not the horse we're used to seeing.
It was a zebra.
Right? Purple zebra walks in, and I'm like, can I saddle you? Like, can we, right? Like, are you one of the Budweiser horses? Like, what do I do with you? Right? Did somebody paint you? What are these weird stripes? I don't know how to handle you. And it's funny to laugh at, but it's really interesting when we look at things just from a slightly different lens,
mm-hmm.
What we see. And I learned this on myself when I do exams on family members, I'll ask them if it's okay. And I'll take my iPhone out and I'll record the visit and go back and watch it. I say a lot of dumb stuff in the exam lane.
Can you give us an Aaronism?
Oh, I repeat myself frequently, because I'm busy charting while I'm talking. And so I'll say something. I realized quickly that I wasn't looking at them for a long time. I was just staring at the chart or the iPad that I was charting on. And so I learned that I need to separate the two. So now I'll ask for a few minutes and just say, hey, it's going to be quiet. You know, we're going to have an awkward silence for a minute. I'm going to focus on putting notes in, and then I'll answer your questions and come back, which they're totally cool with, because they just pull their phone out. But it allows me to focus and not go back and forth. I found that I was... I'd start a thought and wouldn't finish the thought sometimes. I was thinking out loud and they were hearing my thinking process, which when I listened to myself, it made it less trustworthy, because I wasn't definite and here's what we want to do, because they had heard my kind of verbal jumping around, you know, mentally trying to figure out where I wanted to go, as opposed to just saying, here's where I want to go. I had a lot of fillers. I asked for me a lot, you know, look up for me, look down for me, put your chin in here for me. Everything was for me. So it was a very selfish filler. And I pick up on it from listening to a lot of my students now when they're in. For some reason, we have to throw that for me in there, which sounds really awkward and weird.
That's interesting. I like that.
It listening to myself helped me refine what I wanted to say so I could communicate clearer. And I'm by no means perfect now, but more clear, more efficient, helped me streamline the order of when I wanted to explain something. So now I do a bunch of tests and then explain at the end, as opposed to trying to explain little tidbits as I go, because I might find out more information that I then have to change what I told them earlier. And so it's easier just to do the whole exam up front, walk them through what I'm doing, not necessarily what I'm seeing, and then at the end, bring it all home.
Wrapping up the gift with the bow on the top.
Exactly. And I realized that I told them a lot of stuff, so there was no wonder why they weren't following through on all of it. Right? You've got dry eye, I'm putting you in context, you need to wear a mask, you need to do your hypochlorous acid spray and your face wash, and I want you to come back for IPL, and then you're going to get some, like, it was a lot.
Well, and even Aaron, like in the last like 5 to 6 years, where we're getting into more of those things like neuro lens, dry eye, myopia management, it's like you got it. At one time, you just got to pick what you're going to hit with the patient with. Like, figure out what is their top priority and then go into that and then know that they're going to be back. Like, we don't have to give all this in there, because I think a lot of, even my exam has gotten longer and I'm like, what am I doing in here? Like, I'm doing the same thing, but we're having, I think, these deeper conversations because of all the testing that we're doing and all the things that we're finding. So I think you bring up a good point in there on focus.
Yeah,
for sure. In the exam chair.
Yeah, focus. I get so excited of all the stuff we can do. And so it's, and hearing yourself say it is a lot different than thinking you're understanding what you're saying. by just recording that, it was very eye-opening and enlightening, and helped me. I've taken it out of the team. When we role play, I'll make sure that we record them, and we'll see that they talk them, you know, they'll talk patients out of sales because they just keep talking, and or they said a bunch but didn't actually say anything. They just use a lot of words.
Yeah.
So it's unique when we can hear ourselves back, because I don't like scripts, but I do like refining our own personal pitches, if you will.
And as attention is really the commodity now, I think that that's more critical than ever to be more clear, be more concise. Having a 7-year-old, like, I asked him what he did. He was doing something last night. I'm like, why are you doing it like that? I think he was like eating a piece of string cheese, and he was like, mommy, I'm just enjoying it. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I think we overcomplicate things very quickly. And so looking through it as that, like, just being playful in that 7 to 8-year-old lens can come out more. I've even asked him some things, like, I was writing an article on gatekeeping. And I go, Dalton, like, what does a gate do? And he goes, well, it keeps people out. And I said, well, why would we open the gate? And he's like, so people can come play with us, you know? So it was like something so simple that we like manufacture these things that just aren't really true. So if you have a 10-year-old and you're like you were talking about earlier, or, you know, the 7 or 8-year-olds, like, tap in to that creativity, because that's essentially what we squash, especially in school, and the more school that we have. So I think just being more playful has been a gift I've given myself too, that I learned from my dad.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. So I need to be more playful. I'm too serious all the time. At least that's what my wife tells me.
Now that you're not looking at your email anymore, you have all this newfound time.
I will tell you, that has been a game changer. And I hate that phrase with a passion, but that has changed significantly my world in the last couple of months.
Yeah. And your whiteboard. What's on your whiteboard now?
It is. You know what? I had so much on there, I just erased it. So no.
Did you?
Not much. I did.
Okay.
Good. In fact, the only thing I have up there right now is a quote, and I find it an interesting quote. I don't know where I got it from. I might have got it from you. I don't remember. But it says, if you take an idiot and motivate them, then all you have is a motivated idiot.
That's not for me.
I don't know who I got
it
from.
But I like it.
I think, if I remember the conversation, I said, well, my philosophy on hiring is you hire the happy idiot, not the miserable genius. Because you can never take that genius that's miserable and turn them to be happy. There's always going to be a drain. And I think that the reply was that quote. So
I love that.
It reminds us to take that happy person, but make sure you build in all the professional development. And so you take that motivated idiot, and I'm not calling anybody an idiot, but take that motivated, you know, unintelligent person and turn them into that motivated, intelligent person. And then you've got something pretty scary that's kind of cool to watch.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. I'm so glad that you hung your whiteboard up too.
I did. Yeah. See? Got a big influence on me, Brianna.
And same. I think that's where these conversations are fun. And again, just like, we're not in this alone, and you don't have to be.
Nope.
And you got to keep asking for help. And what works well for one might not work for another, but keep on moving.
Absolutely. So awesome. Well, I appreciate joining. Sorry, it was earlier in the day that we didn't have our wines with us. I'll try to make that happen for next time. But I love the idea of the purple zebra. And looking out for it and giving it its due when appropriate. I think it's purple zebras are fun.
Yeah.
And or at least the mental image of one is fun. And we'll treat him as such. And I learned that kangaroos don't jump backwards.
There you go.
So, awesome.
Well, thanks for having me. You too.
Thank you.